Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Press One for Democracy. We have a very, very special show for you in store tonight. This is, of course, Dan Aronson, back home and on the mighty banks of the Willamette River in Portland, Oregon. And from the other side of the world, we'll be welcoming Kelly No, who is a legislative assistant with Public Citizens. And we're going to talk today about all of the different various actions that Public Citizens has going on and queued up over the next several months concerning shareholder action. So this, again, will be fun, a fun show, and a great show for folks to be calling in on and asking Kelly questions and getting to know Public Citizen a little bit better, and again, how to be involved in their actions that are coming up. So again, welcome to the show, Press One for Democracy. That number to call in on, 646-929-2495. I see we have a couple of callers already coming into the queue. Don't forget that when you do call in to get to speak to myself or more importantly for Kelly, make sure you press 1 for democracy. So press 1 on your phone when you're in the queue, and we will get you on the air and get you interacting with our special guest. So, Kelly, welcome.
Hi, Dan. Great. It's great to be on. Thanks so much.
Yeah, fabulous. Just wanted to read for everybody a quick bio of Kelly. So again, Kelly is a legislative assistant with Public Citizens Congress Watch. She works primarily on money and politics issues and corporate accountability campaigns. She became interested in money and politics issues following the Supreme Court Citizen United decision. I think that was a big turning point for a lot of us. But Kelly, instead of just doing something a little bit more, Facebook-y or social media, or maybe even getting on the radio and talking about it, she decided to move to Washington, D.C. To pursue a career in public interest after graduating from the University of Florida in 2011. Go Gators.
Yes,
so,
go Gators.
Before coming to Public Citizen, Kelly interned at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. So again, welcome, Kelly No from Public Citizen. How are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm right up around my bedtime here, but it's okay.
Right, that's it. So yeah, we get a fair number of callers actually from the East Coast. I'm always pleased that folks are willing to stay up and hang out with us. So
great.
Why don't we get started by talking about shareholder actions in general, and what exactly, in general, do you target for shareholder meetings? Who are you targeting, and what are the purposes?
Yeah, so through Public Citizen, I work in a coalition. It's called the Corporate Reform Coalition, and this is a coalition of 80-plus groups. So we're good governance groups, we're labor groups, we're investors, academics, you name it. It's a pretty broad coalition. And within this coalition, what we do is work on a number of issues to advance corporate accountability. So we have these shareholder actions. And essentially what we have is our crop of investors will pick out, companies where they have stock, and they'll file resolutions with these companies saying, we would like you to have better political disclosure policies when you spend in elections, or we want you, or with some companies, they'll say we would like you to refrain entirely from spending in elections. And a new type of resolution they started filing this year is a feasibility resolution. So they'll ask a company to do a study on whether or not it's feasible for them to refrain from spending in elections.
Interesting. Kind of like having a blue ribbon committee convened to decide what's possible and what's not.
Essentially, yeah. And really what we're trying to do is push companies to develop a policy around political spending. So whether it's disclosure, whether it's, board approval, whether it's disclosure to shareholders or approval by their shareholders before these companies go spend money in elections. We just want some sort of accountability at these corporations. And we pick the corporations based on where our investors are, filing the resolutions.
Okay, so speaking of which, just about a week ago, your first action of the year was enacted against, I want to say against, but targeting Starbucks. So what was it specifically about Starbucks that that you saw as an opportunity?
You know, there are a lot of really great things about the Starbucks campaign, ongoing still, of course, but you know, first and foremost, we're prompted by a group, Harrington Investments, is the group that filed the shareholder resolution there. So they filed a resolution asking Starbucks to refrain entirely from spending in elections. This is sort of, I guess they see it as the next step for Starbucks. It's a company that already has very robust disclosure policies. They have really great disclosure. And so really the next step for this company in terms of taking a stance against corporate money in elections is going to be this refrain step. Starbucks is an interesting target for another reason, too, because their CEO, Howard Schultz, has been very outspoken about Washington dysfunction and wanting to get Washington to work for the people. So in 2011, during that debt ceiling debacle, he called on his fellow CEOs to boycott campaign donations until Washington could come together and, you know, drop the dysfunction and get to work for the people. And so this seems, you know, for that company, just another logical step. You know, this is the stance that their CEO has taken. And it's, I mean, it's a great next step for Starbucks as a company that's seen as, you know, rather progressive and a company that really strives to be socially responsible. So it seemed like a great place to sort of try to push them to be, you know, a real leader on this issue of money in politics.
That's beautiful. And you targeted specifically the CEO?
Specifically the CEO. So we did a couple of different things. We did a petition drive, and we collected about 23,000 signatures to deliver directly to the CEO. I delivered those myself in Seattle last week. And then our investors organized a letter. So they had eight or nine investor groups signing on to a letter laying out the reasons why it's important for our democracy to make sure that this money isn't going to influence election, but also why it's important for shareholders. There's a number of reasons why shareholders should be concerned about corporate spending in elections.
And, you know, you said something that I think it's definitely worth stopping and talking about for a second. One of my favorite sayings that I actually I'm claiming credit for having made up is capitalism without conscience is the greatest form of tyranny, but capitalism with conscience is the greatest form of humanity. And I think so often when we talk about getting big money out of politics, we just have this we just kind of lump all of them together in this like evil empire, and you know, they're all, you know, run by Darth Vader-like guys who are just out to crush the rebellion, and we're the rebellion, right? But there's a lot of companies out there that actually have positive stances and do a lot of positive things and care about what Joseph Stiglitz like to call having positive social outcomes as well as positive economic outcomes.
Yeah, and I mean, Starbucks is one of those companies. Like I said, their customer base is pretty progressive, but like I said, their CEO is pretty progressive, and you know, they... you know, just as pet projects have started, you know, initiatives to try and create jobs or, you know, to clean up their supply chains and that sort of thing. I mean, it's a company that strives, I think, to do right by people. I mean, some people will disagree on certain points. Obviously, they're not perfect, but, you know, there are certainly worse corporate actors.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this. So when you enter an action and you lay out an action for a resolution, a shareholder resolution, are there quantifiable goals as far as vote counts that you're looking to get? You know, or is it just in general you're just looking for any type of action?
I mean, it sort of depends on the resolution. So we find that with our disclosure resolutions, we get much higher vote counts. You know, shareholders are very interested in knowing how much money is being spent, where it's being spent. This new type of resolution, these refrain resolutions, they've only been filing them for a couple of years. And so they haven't, or maybe only a year, actually. And so they haven't received the same sort of robust support that the disclosure resolutions have been getting or that the lobbying disclosure resolutions have been getting. But even a low vote can send a pretty serious message to management. When you really think about how the shareholder proxy goes, essentially a lot of people don't even look at those proxies. They toss them in the trash, you know. And then you also have a very large portion of shares that are owned by management or executives in the company. And so to get even a small number, even if you only get, you know, 4 or 5% of shareholders that are paying attention enough and care enough about the issue to vote their proxies, it can send a significant message to management. You don't, with a shareholder proposal, the goal isn't usually to get, it's not like a regular sort of vote. You're not trying to get 50% necessarily. If you get a 30% vote, you're sending a very clear message to management that this is something that their investors care about.
Within those votes, is it a one person, one vote, or is it one share of stock, one vote?
I believe it's shares.
Okay.
We have an investor that can wait, like, speak on that more, but...
All right. Well, because I was wondering if it wasn't one share, one vote, is it possible to target specific investors who might have large chunks of the stock and get them to get them to come out, and then bam, you've got your big amount, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a strategy that we've looked into. A lot of companies' shares are held by sort of big mutual fund sort of groups, like your Fidelities or your Vanguards or BlackRock is another big one. There's a lot of the funds are tied up in that sort of like institutional investors. And a lot of those groups will abstain from voting their proxies so that, you know, they don't come down either way, or they'll vote for or against, but usually the smaller firms or the bigger firms are abstaining. So
another question would be, and this is one I've gotten to know Janine Loudon, who's one of our, not only our treasurer on our board, but also she spent many, many years in large corporate worlds and running finance departments in large corporations. One of the things that she likes to point out is the fact that people often don't stop and think that they're involved, just because they don't make that kind of leapfrog from, my 401k has this fund, and this fund owns this stock, and this stock is within one of the companies that are looking to for the action, you know, to for or looking we're looking to action against them, as it were. Is there something that somebody who is in that position can they do anything? Somebody just has it like as part of their 401k portfolio.
I mean, I think the important thing is to know that it's going on and to make it clear to. You know, whoever's managing your investments, that this is something that you care about. Really, I think it's some extremely large number of Americans have these, you know, have a 401k or what have you. Even I have a 401k. I certainly don't think of myself as like an investor. You know, when you say shareholder, I don't think to myself like, oh, that's me. That's me included in that category. But, you know, I mean, I have a 401k and my parents have 401ks and, you know, it makes this sort of an all-encompassing issue.
Wall Street firms that manage 401ks ever come forward and talked about getting behind one of these resolutions?
I'm not sure that any of the big funds have. The former CEO of Vanguard, John Bogle, is in favor of more disclosure for corporations. I mean, he actually weighed in. There's a big initiative at the Securities and Exchange Commission right now. We're pushing them to also require this sort of disclosure of corporate political spending. I mean, he weighed in on that comment, which that rulemaking petition at the Securities and Exchange Commission has almost 500,000 supportive comments. It's totally record-breaking. No rulemaking or potential rulemaking at the SEC has ever received that many comments on any issue. I mean, that's another great way that people, you know, folks with a 401k can weigh in. You can ask the Securities and Exchange Commission to make this rule that says that, you know, any corporation spending money in elections, you've got to disclose it.
Well, that's I asked that question pretty much thinking you were going to laugh at me. Going,
oh, really?
Man, these are the guys who want to buy influence in Washington. Why would they possibly, you know, speak out against doing so?
You've got supporters on both sides. Yeah.
That's good. It's
I wouldn't call it robust support, but I mean to have the former CEO of a big fund like that is, you know, it's pro disclosure.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, it'd be nice to get one who's actually sitting in their job, but maybe that's,
yeah, that's
the way
true.
You become a former CEO really quickly.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's true. I mean, there's almost 500,000 supportive comments on that rulemaking at the Securities Exchange Commission, but you can bet the Chamber of Commerce has already weighed in, and they're not supportive.
Oh yeah, no, we know about those folks from the last time we had you on. So that was that was kind of obvious. So we have a comment here from one of our because I don't know that any of my listeners are normal, but one of our regular chat room attendants, as it were, was saying if the SEC was going to change its rules, I'd rather they restore the uptick rule first, but then there was an LOL. I'm not familiar with the uptick rule. Are you by any chance familiar with the uptick rule?
Unfortunately, I am not. The Securities and Exchange Commission, my sort of first foray into dealing with them has been this political spending rule that we're pushing.
Okay. Well, maybe Biz, if you can, if you want to go ahead and expand on that uptick rule, unless it really was just a joke that I don't get, and Kelly's really tired, so I don't know that she's going to get too many jokes tonight. So, but if you want to go ahead and type that up there. Just wanted to remind everybody again, you're listening to Press One for Democracy. This is your host, Dan Aronson, welcoming in our very special guest, Kelly Ngo from Public Citizens. The number to call in and talk to us is 646-929-2495. And like I said, we've got a caller in queue that has not raised their hand. So just remember, though, if you are in queue and you do want to speak to Kelly or myself, please do press 1 when you get into the queue. We have Greg. Greg has graciously gone ahead and posted your website, so everybody in the chat room can click on the website and go and poke around and see what Citizens, Public Citizens, is all about. Back to the kind of goals of the actions. Paint the perfect picture for us. What would be considered the ultimate win for a shareholder resolution?
Well, for our Starbucks resolution, we would love for Howard Schultz to call us and say that he understands that corporate money in elections is the reason why Washington doesn't work anymore, and that's why he's directing his company to refrain from spending in elections. And furthermore, he's going to reach out to other corporations to do the same. That would be that's a pretty perfect scenario there.
Why not? If you can think it, it can happen. If it can be conceived, it can be delivered on. So why not? So
yeah,
then,
I mean, there are a lot of good outcomes to achieve through this. Whether it's like I said, if you get a high enough vote and a company decides, okay, let's go ahead and create this sort of policy on political spending. We're going to disclose our donations. We're going to have board oversight of our donations, et cetera, et cetera. Or you can have a group say, we will make a rule that says if we're going to give to a trade association or to a nonprofit, we're going to explicitly say that our funds are not to be spent in elections. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can sort of push a company to, do the right thing. And I mean, the end goal is obviously to get corporate money out of elections, but, any strides that we can make towards accountability and disclosure, always good things.
If we can't force them out ourselves, then certainly we can bring the focus of public exposure down upon them, and then they can act. I know the Big Apple coffee party is engaging in a Don't Do Coke Day on April 1st for April Fools. Don't do Coke, and they're going to actually literally be standing outside of stores and handing out lists of Koch Brothers products and encouraging people not to buy them, and they'll even have, here's an alternative product to that product that isn't made by Coke. So, sometimes, having the public directly interfere with their pocketbooks is a good way to do it as well. So I think we've got a lot of cool actions going on a lot of different fronts. We have a caller in queue that has raised their hand. Are you ready to take a call, Kelly?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's bring in one of our regulars. Let's bring in Jack Golding from Kansas. Jack, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine. what are we talking about here, corporate?
Well, we've got Kelly Noe with Public Citizens on, Jack, and what we're talking about are the various actions, shareholder actions that they're sponsoring and driving towards in getting shareholders to stand up and tell their corporations, we don't want you wasting money trying to buy public officials. We'd rather you enhance the value of the company, which is what they are paid to do.
Yeah, well, I have an opinion that I think that the mass media is partly responsible for all this happening, or they're turning a blind eye towards this whole mess. And I think the way to do that, again, it's partisanship is at the bottom of this. And I think the solution would be nonpartisan primaries. I mean, people are afraid of they might say take the gun issue. Particularly Democrats and Republicans, the Democrats especially from red states like Arkansas and Missouri and all, they're being threatened to be primaried, and they're afraid that they have such little confidence that they can beat a crackpot right-wing candidate from I think it's partly the problem of the people.
Well, how about we let Kelly tackle these one at a time, Jack?
Yeah, you know, I was going to say on the issue of, I mean, it's great that you bring up the partisanship, and it really sort of, I think that this is really important for what we're trying to do. I think a lot of the partisanship in Washington really does come from this corporate spending in elections. I mean, a lot of your politicians have these very seemingly uncompromising positions on these issues, but you got to think about their campaigns. You know, these are people whose whole careers are going to rise and fall on really the whims of their donors, right? So they're not going to do anything to alienate those sources of money. And that means that they're going to take really uncompromising positions. It means that they're not going to legislate effectively because they're not going to ask those tough hearing questions, or they're not going to, you know, they're not going to take those controversial votes. Partisanship in a lot of ways, I think, is it's the overflowing money in the system is really creating a total gridlock in Washington. I think we see that, right? We, you know, the sequester is this latest example of total partisan gridlock. But I think if you follow the money, you'll find your politicians probably don't have as intractable positions as they stake out, but their funders certainly do. So
the other thing Jack brought up is the media. Is there anything that can be done from a standpoint of public action to bring pressure on media to do things like crazy things like, I don't know, tell the truth?
Totally wild, crazy things like tell the truth.
That goes from the New York Times on down. And that goes for CNN and MSNBC, because I don't listen to Fox. They're always talking about Fox. Everything that goes on in Fox, anything they want to go, they go with Rush Limbaugh, or they go with, the crazy thing is they mentioned, what's her name in Minnesota?
Michelle
Bachman.
Michelle Bachman. They waste the time discussing her. I think these things would be ignored, and I think the people that vote for people like that are just as guilty as she is.
Well, and that brings us to a great question, Kelly. You know, we read daily about the congressional approval ratings being about 11%. there are all kinds of polls out there that say, you know, little to no people believe that that their representatives are actually representing them. But this only, you know, 4 months after an election. I mean, how do we keep making these same mistakes? Apparently.
You know, and I like I said, I think that it really does sort of go back to your funders and your partisanship. I think, you know, it takes a lot of money to win a campaign, and the way that our system is structured, that there's so much money that's just sort of sloshing around. It's really not a system that is open to newcomers. You know, the incumbents are very likely to win because they're the ones that already have that entrenched funding. And then, of course, if you're a reformer, if you're looking at the system and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I'd like to change things here, and then you think about, you know, how much money you've got to raise and how it's not just your opponent that's going to come after you. There's a super PAC that's going to come after you. There's a trade association that's going to come after you. There's the dark money nonprofit that's going to come after you. I mean, you've got a lot of messaging to compete with, but you've got a lot of money to compete with too. And you know, your incumbents have that power, and they can, I mean, they use it as they will. So.
Well, as long as we're kind of going down this track, what do you see the effect of social media being? Is it starting to even put a dent in the traditional media that's spent on like crazy in election cycles?
You know, I think social media has had a really it's really made a big dent. I think we can really do a lot of organizing around social media. But I, you know, for a lot of people, I mean, not everyone, but for a lot of people, Twitter is really their sort of go-to place to scan the headlines and, you know, see what people are really talking about. So, and I think as people become more acquainted with this technology, you know, young and moving on up there, I think we'll find that its impact is only going to be amplified.
Well, that's interesting you say Twitter. I mean, I do know that that's very popular. Although I will say that I do not tweet often myself, but I will I would say
I do not tweet at all.
Yeah, Jack,
I do not tweet at all.
Yeah, Jack and I are not twits.
I'm more
for Facebook.
But in all seriousness, I mean, we've gone, one of the big indictments of the voting population as it is that we've gone to this soundbite mentality where, you know, I get my little 30-second, you know, headline, Fox headline news or CNN headline news, and you know, I listen for 30 seconds on the radio and I get a little soundbite, and then that's what everybody's kind of glomming onto as far as forming their opinions. Now we're talking about 140 characters or less. Isn't that dangerous?
Well, that's why I don't tweet.
I mean, Twitter is certainly a good way to create a sensational headline. But, I mean, most times, it sort of depends on who you're following on Twitter, right? If you're following, you know, reporters who are tweeting out their well-researched stories, or if you're following organizations like Public Citizen that are bringing you sort of the up-to-minute what's happening on the Hill and how we're voting on it and how, you know, what we're working on, our petitions and actions. Like, social media is a great gateway to getting really involved. And to really sort of keeping up with all of these groups can be, you know, it can be hard to say, you know, what's going on with Citizens United. But if you hop on Twitter and you type in the hashtag Citizens United, you'll get a plethora of groups who are doing, you know, X, Y, Z different actions on Citizens United. You can do the same thing, you know, with the constitutional amendment. Anything that you're interested in, really. You can hop on Twitter or on Facebook and type that in and see what, you know, a really infinite number of groups in the United States are doing on those.
Well,
Greg
from the chat room, you know, also talked about it being a doorway to greater detail. So I have no problem with it as long as people are actually taking the time to go and then do the research and get the greater detail. Then if it's used as that kind of a tool, fantastic. Who do I follow on Twitter, or how do I follow Public Citizen? What's your handle?
Our handle, I believe it's just Public Citizen, but it may have an underscore in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just at public _citizen, and then you can follow Public Citizen. And then really a good way to figure out who to follow on Twitter is to see who the people that you like are following. So once you follow Public Citizen, you can see that we're following almost 4,000 other people. But, I mean, you can look through that and find, you know, different organizations that you might find interesting or that sort of thing. You can also see, once you follow someone, who they're retweeting. And if someone is, say, Public Citizen has decided to retweet someone, it means, you know, Public Citizen, it doesn't say that you're necessarily endorsing it, but, I mean, it means that Public Citizen is paying attention to that person, and you can, you know, then go check out that person's Twitter page and see if you want to follow them.
Okay.
It's definitely a good gateway to getting really involved and being up on issues if well used.
Phenomenal. And for folks like Jack, do you guys have a Facebook page?
Yeah, we definitely have a Facebook page. So you can just type in.
I get Facebook. Do Facebook every day, and. I think it's a good thing, but I don't want to get caught up in games. I don't do games, and I don't think they want to donate money and all kinds of causes. There are good causes, and there are not so good causes. I've gotten to the point that the Democrats are the lesser of two evils.
I mean, we would, with our work, we try to stay very nonpartisan. We're very to the issues.
Annabelle
Park yesterday brought up the point you should try to be less partisan. Avoid partisanship, avoid the left and the right, left, right, center. Okay. Well, it is. Well, get involved with No Labels. If I had the money to do so, that'd be a good place to support. No Labels, and because it's a completely nonpartisan thing. Anything that avoids partisanship is a cause of what the hell's gone wrong with politics, and the Republicans represent everything you hate about politics.
Well, as always, Jack, we really appreciate your calling in and contributing to the show. Anything else you want to say in parting?
Yeah, I got to do is keep up the fight. How the heck I want to get involved in Kansas, but I need help. I can't do it by myself. I'd have to get. I'm thinking of doing a web page saying, if you I've put forth my ideas, what I stand for, and whoever wants to join with me, I'll establish a web page.
Well, sounds like a plan, Jack. And if you stick around for just one more second, what we're going to do is we'll get Kelly to talk about that next. Exactly how you can get involved with some of the Public Citizens actions, because I believe there's a lot of neat ways to do that just electronically. So, Kelly, why don't you talk about the various options for getting involved?
Sure. So, on our website, Public Citizen website, we have an action page where you can. Peruse sort of what we're up to. And so on the action page right now, one of our best initiatives, one of our coolest initiatives, and maybe partial because I'm a money politics person, but one of the petitions you can sign is a petition against Chevron. So in the last election, Chevron made the largest corporate donation ever to a super PAC. They donated $2.5 million to the Congressional Leadership Fund. And so we'll be doing a shareholder meeting action out at Chevron in a couple of months. We expect that meeting to be in late May. But if you want to add your name to the petition, we're calling on the Federal Election Commission because in addition to this being sort of a humongous donation to a super PAC, Chevron is actually a government contractor. which we argue makes their donation to a super PAC actually illegal under a law that prohibits federal contractors from making political donations. So that's, I mean, that's standing out right now. I think it's one of our most interesting initiatives right now.
So that is interesting that you said it. So just to talk about that a little bit further, so you're saying that there's a law that says public contract, or sorry, is that just if you get any money from the government, the grants, or is it just contracts, or is there a limit to the size of the contract?
So they're a federal contractor. I'm not sure if the contract has to be a certain size, but I mean Chevron has hundreds of government contracts. And so they've tried to sort of counter the argument and say that, oh, Chevron Corporation didn't make the donation. It was a subsidiary, which, you know, we're not buying that. You know, Chevron has made essentially it's just, I think, on their part, an oversight. They made a donation that they didn't really realize it was illegal. allegedly illegal. I'm sorry, because we're not.
Do you know if anybody at Justice is looking into it? Is anybody actually studying it? Or
we've put in our official complaint to the Federal Election Commission. So we'll have to just see. I mean, I don't know if you know anything about the SEC, but it doesn't work very well right now.
Well, I think most regulatory institutions aren't working very well, or certainly aren't working very well for the people, because of the revolving door between the private and the public sector, where these people are coming from, the regulators are coming from the private industry, they go into regulation, and then they turn around and they go right back into their industry and profit from the regulations that they've, you know, jury-rigged in their favor. So, yeah, I think that could be said of probably most regulatory agencies these days.
Federal Election Commission is particularly broken. Most of the commissioners sitting on the board, their terms have actually expired. They don't have like a real vested interest in advancing the regulatory goals, aims of the Federal Election Commission. And they're constantly deadlocked. The three Republicans and three Democrats on the board, they're constantly coming to basically no decision on election issues.
No, that is sad. So just so everybody knows, I posted the action page in the chat room, but it's www.citizen.org/page .ASPX. *PID equals 1326. I'll have to talk to your webmaster about that one.
I think we probably have a much easier bit.ly.
Okay. All right. But, you know, to get to it, you just go to the main page at Public Citizen under Get Involved. The first drop-down menu choice is Action Center. And actually, there's a whole lot of things. It's not just money and politics you guys are doing. I see there's an action here against BP to hold BP accountable for their mess in the Gulf and lots of other actions that are going on currently.
Yeah, we're sort of a strong organization.
Okay. Well, that's very cool. And if I'm guessing, actually, just looking at perusing this, I mean, root out corruption in the oil market, break up Bank of America, I'd imagine a lot of these things have cross-referenceable, I guess, maybe tentacles, if you will, that reach into many different organizations or sub-organizations within your group. I'm just guessing. Maybe you can confirm that.
Yeah, I mean, sort of the overarching, you know, theme, I guess, of Public Citizen is sort of, you know, being that backstop against corporate power. And so whether that's, you know, regulating the financial system so that we don't get the same sort of crash that we had in 08, or whether that's, you know, putting a check on corporations who are trying to rig the justice system, or who are trying to rig your elections, Public Citizen is sort of the organization is such that we have experts on staff who really know their stuff, and they're the ones that create these campaigns and these initiatives, whether it's energy or financial reform or money and politics. We also do health. We're a big group.
About how many people are there in public citizen?
You know, that's an interesting question. There's got to be at least 100 of us. I'm not sure. That we're it's hard to say. We're divided into two offices, so I'm never in the other office.
We can go to the action page. We can get folks driven there. What about any grassroots actions? Are you doing anything on the grassroots level?
I think really our most traditional grassroots campaign is going to be our constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United campaign called Democracy is for People. And it's not an area that I work on too closely since I'm mostly doing these corporate accountability campaigns. But the Democracy is for People page is his own website, actually. And they're really, really a great grassroots shop. They're passing resolutions in, cities and states all over the country, and they're working their way towards building that big momentum movement for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United.
Yeah, well, that is definitely a obviously a big task. Have they dared put any kind of a timeline on it?
Certainly, I think it's a long game. It's a long game, but I think we all recognize the ultimate solution to what we've got to do. So.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I don't think we can sit and wait for a justice to retire, especially the right justice to retire, before that gets reconsidered. But it was proffered to me by a law professor, a constitutional law professor, that she did not believe that they had enough data points to really connect the dots, to show the quid pro quo. And her assertion was that it will come back in front of the court, and there will be a lot more data points, and that those data points will show a clear quid pro quo, a clear buying, a purchasing of policymaking, a purchasing of legislating, and a purchasing of influence. So her hope is that will resolve the situation before the amendment can.
Potentially. We'll see how it all shakes out. But I think the constitutional amendment is really important for establishing, for establishing what is speech and who can speak, essentially. And I think it's important to have that enshrined in the Constitution. So.
I would agree with
who
you, and I would guess that everybody listening to you would agree with you, whether they're doing it now or whether they're listening on an archive. But let me ask you this, and this is something I kind of threw out there as a conversation starter, not necessarily, that I believe what I'm about to say, right? Or mm-hmm. Maybe I just hope that I don't. But to me, money is like, I've always said, money is like a drop of rain that lands on top of a mountain. And gravity is going to do its work, and it's going to find its way down to the bottom of the mountain. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. Water will go around things. It finds its way there. Somebody else, I guess, the other day said it's like cracks on a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Money is like it rain on a sidewalk. It's going to find the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
What if we get to the point where we've got a constitutional amendment that says corporations can't donate, period? Are there really no other ways for them to get money into the political system to corrupt it?
You're probably right. Essentially, every, historically campaign finance reform has met with more creative ways to thwart campaign finance reform, right? So I think the constitutional amendment is incredibly important to push for, just on principle in terms of how we want to, in terms of how we want this country and how we want this democracy to function. I think, just for me personally, what also is very important is to find a way to create a way for regular folks to have a say too, it's sort of like a competing money. We have to create some sort of very robust public financing system that's going to amplify the voices of regular people. Some kind of system that you know, your politicians can come out and court your votes, but also court your dollars that are going to be amplified in their campaigns by, you know, a public financing system. I think the problem is right now all they hear is industry, 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 and they have to take those calls. They have to fundraise constantly. I mean, your lawmakers are spending really exorbitant amounts of time fundraising. There's estimates that they're spending anywhere from 30 to 70% of their time fundraising. But it's all from industry, essentially. So I think another part of, you know, another piece of the puzzle here to getting a democracy that's functional, a democracy that works for the people, is to amplify the voice of the people. I mean, really, we're talking about creating more speech through a public financing system that it gives your, you know, your politicians a reason to come out and talk to you and get those small donations.
Well, yeah, and I have a bunch of theories on how to do that. Especially when it comes to presidential elections, although many would argue that the president, I mean, obviously, the president doesn't tax and spend. He can't levy taxes. He can't spend money. I mean, he has his own budget, but it's nothing, right? So maybe that's not it. But we do have a question from the chat room, and I don't know how familiar you are with the action against Bank of America, but the question came out, why Bank of America rather than HSBC?
Why break up Bank of America as opposed to HSBC?
Right.
Essentially. Bank of America, I mean, that's an initiative we started, over a year ago now, I think. And we just deemed them to be one of those organizations that's just systemically far too large and poses a huge risk to the financial system. In terms of not HSBC, we do have an initiative against HSBC right now. I don't work too closely on financial reform, but I do know that we have a letter out to the Maryland Attorney General asking them to decharter HSBC for violating their charter, essentially. I think that something in the bank is chartered in Maryland, and something in the charter says that one of the things they're explicitly not allowed to do is anything involving drugs. Well, HSBC is guilty of that.
I was going to say that's interesting. We'll freeze the assets of companies that work with terrorists, but drug dealers, nah, they're okay.
Yeah. So I mean, so that's an action we have right now. And if you're more interested in the financial reform work that we're doing, if you go to the Public Citizen website, the far left tab is Our Work, and then you can just scroll down and click on financial reform. And you'll be able to see all the different stuff that we're doing on HSBC and then previously on Bank of America.
Very cool, very cool. And Biz Tutor says, thanks for the answer, Kelly.
Oh, no, and I'm sorry if it's a little bit of a meandering answer. It's not quite my issue area, and it's an area that requires quite a lot of expertise.
Well, it is, and not only does it require a lot of expertise, but the fact of the matter is that if you really went after every corrupt financial institution, a large corporation. I don't know. You know what? Hey, do me a favor. Give me a little hope here. Name some of the good ones. You said Starbucks had a good start on their disclosure policy. Name a couple of other, like if you had, you know, who are the models out there, the good ones?
I mean, I think that for these, you're going to find corporations that are good and bad, you know, essentially like a corporation, they've just got so many policies and they do so many things. In terms of political spending, there are some good corporations out there. The Center for Political Accountability, they keep a chart of, you know, which corporations are really moving ahead on their disclosure resolutions, actually there are a handful of corporations that don't spend at all in elections. They haven't been very public about it, which is something we were trying to achieve with Starbucks. But I think there are a few companies, if I can try to remember off the top of my head. I think that Merck is a company that doesn't spend very much money in elections, or they have some sort of policy against it.
Merck, the pharma company?
I think so. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think with all the gerrymandering isn't the right word, but with all that, let's just call it that. With all the gerrymandering of the that they did with the Medicare, the drug benefit, the extended drug benefit, you know, which basically included a rule that said, oh, by the way, you can't negotiate prices with pharma,
yeah,
Medicaid. But that's lobbying, not election spending. Yeah. Well, see, no, well, that's the other thing. So maybe you could talk to a little bit about that. I mean, because that seems to be the other logical entry point for money into the system, right? Is through lobbying.
Mm-hmm.
Do public citizens have any specific anti-lobbying actions going on?
Public Citizen has really, I mean, our government affairs lobbyist, his name is Craig Holman. He's really the best. I mean, he's really been instrumental in writing ethics rules and lobbying rules. Again, not my like biggest area of expertise, but there, I mean, we've really pushed for reform in lobbying in terms of it being more open and being more accountable.
Doesn't that actually just really point out the whole kind of rub in the whole thing, which is money is not necessarily good or evil. It's either the people that are trying to use it for the said purposes or the people who actually use it for said purposes that are the good or the evil, right? So, I mean, there's a perfect example of a good lobbyist, right? Now, are good lobbyists only needed because of the bad ones? Or...
I mean, Public Citizen example of a group that's full of good lobbyists, essentially. Like, I mean, and all the public interest groups are in Washington, D.C. There are plenty of great lobbyists out there that are lobbying for more rules on lobbyists, or there are plenty of lobbyists out there who are lobbying for campaign finance reform or for fixing the financial system, but we're really outgunned. I mean, their industry just has so many lobbyists. Essentially, and we'll have offices tell us, you know, thank you for coming in and giving us the other side, because the only people we've heard from is industry so far, you know.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, you know, and it's just gotten so, to me, it's become so audacious. I mean, from a group like Alec coming in with a finished, completed bill saying, here, just take this to the floor. That scares me a lot. And that the fact that there's actually people that they can approach and actually think that they're going to have a chance of getting it done, or people that do get it done for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you did. So, but I mean, I think it's worth noting that just like there are good corporations and bad corporations, there are good lobbyists and there are bad lobbyists, and
mm-hmm.
maybe it's a whole yin-yang thing, and the system, I don't know, but it just seems like it makes the system totally adversarial. And is, you know, it that might be good for a court of law where somebody's, you know, life or their liberty is at stake. But it shouldn't be everything shouldn't be adversarial, should it?
Should it be adversarial?
I mean, it just seems that way.
Should it always be
everything
is become
adversarial?
I think it depends on the issue area, right? There are a lot of areas, I think, where you find groups that are left or right come together because the issue area matters to them. It used to be not that long ago that you would have, you know, Dems and Republicans who are on board for disclosure. Not quite the case right now, but, I mean, in the not-too-distant past, we had bipartisan campaign finance reform. You know, I think there are issues, particularly on financial reform, where the left and the right say, you know, having a bank that is too big to jail is problematic, you know, and that's, so it's not all necessarily adversarial. There are definitely areas when you really get down to the issues and principles that where these groups have more in common, or these, you know, legislators probably have more in common than they think that they do.
Okay, which actually brings me to another point I wanted to raise, just to make sure everybody understood that was listening, and that is that, and I think Eric Beiler said it best as the best explanation I ever heard about partisanship in D.C. He said it's really not a two-party system; it's a three-party system. There's the Democrats, there's the Republicans, and there's big money, and frankly,
mm-hmm.
big money is winning.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Right. So I guess.
I mean, there's no
finger
pointing on. It's not like we can say, like, oh, it's all them. They're all Republicans that are taking all this big money and not getting anything done. It's definitely happening on both sides.
Oh, well, right. Exactly. And I just wanted to, again, as a matter of establishing credibility for your organization, I just wanted to, you know, to ask you the kind of obvious question, or at least the one I think is an obvious answer, and that is, so we know that Google and Microsoft were the two largest contributors to the Obama campaign, and I was wondering if you had anything going, actions against either of those companies.
Sure. I mean, actually, not Microsoft right now, but we do have, we're planning for later in the year around the Google shareholder meeting. We're going to ask Google to leave the Chamber of Commerce because their values don't align with the Chamber of Commerce. Google is a company that's, you know, pushed very hard for green energy, and they've also differed with the Chamber over over the online privacy and piracy act. And so, I mean, this is an example. I mean, we really are nonpartisan. I mean, Starbucks is another company that's going to have, that, like I said, their CEO has sort of a progressive tilt, but it doesn't matter. It's about getting all of this money out of the system. It's about, you know, sort of freeing our legislators up so that they can actually legislate and so that they can actually listen to their constituents, whether it's, you know, left or right. For us, it really is the issue.
Right. And so there, I think you paint the perfect picture of the real problem and what Eric is referring to when he said, and big money is winning. So here's Google, who is going to be a huge contributor to the president. I'm guessing most likely because of the SOPA and the Online Privacy Acts and the fact that the left is going to be a much more liberal in their stance about protecting the rights of individuals and not letting government necessarily get a hold of and really tightly regulate and get us away from net anonymity and those kinds of things. But then they'll turn around and they'll be a huge contributor to U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is going to give virtually 100% of its money to right-leaning causes and pro-business causes.
Yeah.
So it's like the ones
true.
Who are wealthy
I mean,
enough play both sides. So how
they do
they can't
and
lose.
And that way you never lose, right?
Right.
Yeah. Most groups you'll see, it's not like a corporation is doing, 100% of all of its giving is going to, Republicans, or all 100% is going to Democrats. When you look at these corporations, it's usually like a 40-60 split. Like, no matter what, they're not really going to lose.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got only a couple minutes left with Kelly, who has got to leave us at the top of the hour. Again, you're listening to Press One for Democracy with host Dan Aronson. We have special guest Kelly Noe from Public Citizens, who has graciously spent the last hour with us explaining all the different actions that are currently going on. And so let me leave you with this. Kelly, what's next?
So upcoming for us, we've got a lot of different stuff coming up. For anybody that's in the Pittsburgh area, we've got a great action coming up against EQT. They're a company that does fracking in Pennsylvania. And so, of course, the environmental groups are all fired up. We're fired up because EQT makes a lot of political donations to state-level politics or politicians, and I think is pretty easily able to thwart environmental regulations because of it, and there are some charges of some tax dodging, essentially, to look into it more. But essentially, we'll be having an action outside of their shareholder meeting on April 17th. And then coming up, you can also look for our actions against Chevron. That one's a little further down the line. It's in late May, so we'll keep Dan in the loop, obviously, and keep everyone here in the loop. And then, of course, Google will be the month after May, June. And so all of those things are coming down the pipe. If you want to get involved and come out to a shareholder rally and help support getting big money out of politics, then
I definitely want to work with you on the EQT front because we have a very very strong presence in Pennsylvania, and I think maybe even folks who would be willing to make the trek even from eastern Pennsylvania or the Philly area to Pittsburgh, but. It's a very strong chapter out there, and so if we got a chance to be on site and make some noise, I bet we can rally the troops. So
fantastic! Would like to do make some noise.
All right, perfect. Well, Kelly, cannot thank you enough for staying up late with us. Kelly Noe from Public Citizens out in Washington D.C. has been our guest. Wish you well in everything and all your different actions. And, of course, please stay in touch because we want to promote those and make sure that all of our Coffee Party members are aware and involved in getting money out of politics because that, like your passion, is our passion as well.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me on. This has been really fun, even if it isn't.
Glad you are certainly welcome anytime.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thanks, Kelly.
Well, we'll just about wrap it up for tonight's show. like to thank everybody who called in and those of you in the chat rooms. Without your participation, oh, there wouldn't really be much point in doing the show, so thank you very much. My name is Dan Aronson, and I hope you'll join us each Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Press 1 for Democracy. Have a great night.